paradise is there. You'll have all that you can eat, with milk and honey over there. You'll be the brightest light that the world has ever seen. Sun-baked, slender, harrowing film and magazine.
Natalie Merchant was the lead singer and chief lyricist for the indie rock band 10,000 Maniacs for 12 years, and she surprised many of their fans when she left the band in 1993 to work on her first solo album called Tiger Lily. It became a bestseller with 3 hit singles. Now, to celebrate the 20th anniversary of that album, she has recorded all new versions of those songs for Nonesuch Records and made a documentary film about her life and career. They're being released as a set under the title Paradise Is There, the new Tiger Lily recordings, and I'm delighted to welcome Natalie Merchant to our show today. Hello.
Hello, Leonard. Pleasure to be here.
Why did you want to remake this whole album after 20 years? Have you continued to play these songs in your live concerts and watch them change?
That is the reason, actually. But they had changed so much, especially the 5 songs that over the years I've had string arrangements written for. So they were radically different.
So these recordings include the backing of a string quartet along with guitars and drums.
Mm-hmm. And accordion. And
you started
saxophone.
Using the strings in concerts?
Actually, for the last 6 years, have pretty much exclusively done orchestral shows.
Has your voice changed at all? Is that also a factor in this?
And
the way it might interact with strings?
That, and also the familiarity with the material. When I was in the studio 20 years ago recording the record, I was still finishing lyrics at the microphone, and I just didn't really know the songs that deeply. And then after years and years of playing them, it's like second nature to perform them.
So the way you've changed these may also reflect how you've come to think about these songs?
Yes, definitely. The interpretations reflect all the change in, you know, perceptible or non.
Because actors will talk about how, as they play a role, they continue to know more and more about the character they're playing. I would assume,
your understanding,
even if you wrote
deepen.
The song, you are learning more and more about it as you keep on performing it.
As you learn more about life, you know, as you age. Definitely the song Wonder is a good example of that.
We'll talk about that in a moment.
We'll talk about it later.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Well, I think we're
going
to go out with it, so I wanted to okay. save that. The film which accompanies the CD is a mix of memoir interviews, performance footage. Did you film the recording sessions for the new album?
We did a bit, but I really didn't want the film to be about the making of the record. I wanted it to be about the life of the songs.
Mm-hmm. And so there's also concert footage here.
Concert footage and many interviews with fans of the album, because I wanted it to be about how the material went out and did this ambassador's work in the world and how it affected people.
You began your music career with 10,000 Maniacs when you were a teenager from your hometown, Jamestown, New York. I know a little bit about Jamestown. Lucille Ball comes from Jamestown.
No, she's the patron of saint.
A former Supreme Court Justice Robert H. Jackson, the naturalist Roger Torrey Peterson, and the NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell. And wasn't it once called the furniture capital of the world?
It was.
I don't associate any of that with indie rock.
No, you probably wouldn't.
How did that happen?
It's interesting because when the band formed back in 1980, I was still only 17 years old. There was only one store in the entire town where you could buy a copy of the New York Times or Rolling Stone, and there was no MTV. And our exposure to the sort of imagery of music, rock music, was so limited. And
so did that free you in a way?
It made us very, I think, unique because of that isolation. And it was right, we began right at the beginning of, you know, cable television and MTV and all that changed. And now with the internet, anyone in the most remote corner of the world can watch a Beyonce video now at the click of a button.
Although MTV has changed a lot over the years. Now they do shows. Yeah. The band was commercially successful. You recorded several albums, toured the world. That must have been exciting for somebody who started at 17 in a small town, 30,000 population. Did the success change you?
Definitely, because it gave me access to the world. You know, the vehicle for my coming of age and being acquainted with the larger world was the band.
And is that also why you wound up leaving the band in 1993?
Well, after 12 years, I really felt like that was a great education. When I started, I didn't really know how to write songs. I didn't know how to perform. I couldn't adequately, you know, command myself in an interview situation. I was really, I had no experience. What experience can you really have at that age? And over the years, I progressively became more of the leader of the band, the spokesperson, and then it just felt like a natural progression to
but
go out on my own.
You couldn't have recorded the songs that you had in Tiger Lily with 10,000 Maniacs?
Well, everyone in 10,000 Maniacs was a songwriter, mm-hmm. so there was perpetual competition for that space. You know, usually you'd put 10 to 12 songs on a record with six members of the band. You know, that's two apiece.
This
not
is
a full album. You can't really express yourself in two songs.
It's not a unique situation. I've spoken to all the members of Police, and they mm-hmm. all were jockeying to get their songs on the album. Some people say, one of them would say, I don't want to do that song, and that would become a problem as
right.
well. Did you write all of the songs in Tiger Lily after you left the group?
Yes, I did.
So that also reflects changing attitudes about things, because most of the songs are narratives, and they often address social issues.
Mm-hmm. Well, in 10,000 Maniacs, I was definitely, through my lyrics, very concerned with social issues. That wasn't anything new. But I think my voice became more personal and more feminine when I went solo.
In the documentary, you say that the group all lived together like a family while you were working on this album.
On this album.
Is it important for you to work with musicians that you know well, not just studio musicians who you hire for a recording session?
For me, it is. Yeah, it's a very intimate experience to make music with people. And I've had experiences on stage where I haven't really known someone that well, and we've collaborated. And definitely when I do the orchestral shows, there's usually 30 strangers on stage. But everything is scripted, and it's different playing orchestral music. Definitely in an improvisational situation, it's good to have that comfort and familiarity with the people you're collaborating with.
I'm speaking with Natalie Merchant, whose latest project is a set of film and recording called Paradise Is There, the new Tiger Lily recordings out from Nonesuch. How do you write the songs? Is there some, for example, the song River, which is about River Phoenix, was it written after he died of that drug-induced heart failure?
Yes. River was actually a friend of mine. So when he died, I was trying to process that. And I remember going to the supermarket, and there was a photograph of him on the cover of one of those tabloids that you see at the grocery store, or usually ignore at the grocery store, but someone had entered the funeral home and photographed his body. I don't know if you remember that. And I was shocked, and I was enraged, and I went home. And just what I usually do when I'm shocked and enraged is sit down at the piano and try to sort it out. And that's what was the result, was this song, River.
Because you were concerned with the fact that they were sensationalizing a rather tragic situation, and also ignoring
violating
the tragedy
the
for the rest of the family.
Yeah. And also those of us who, not just because I had actually had the privilege of knowing him, but I feel like so many of the young people who had watched him grow up, you know, he started being in films when he was, 10 years old, 10, 11 years old. And it felt like he was, what I say in the song is he was one of ours, because we really did feel that he was belonged to us in a way. And we wanted to protect him, belong to us in the way that when you have a circle of friends or a family, you belong to each other.
Beloved Wife is about a man whose wife of 50 years has died, and he doesn't know how he'll go on. Mm-hmm. Was that based on anything in your
family?
My
grandparents. My grandfather died 10 days after my grandmother passed, and he was healthy as an ox. And there's no reason for him to die other than of a broken heart.
But that does happen.
It does, and I witnessed it. And although it happened when I was only 19, it was to me this example of devotional, pure love that I held out, you know, for and still do to, for myself as that example.
And then the song that I put off talking about, Wonder, about a child who's born with challenges and who defies doctors' expectations, it's become a kind of an anthem for the handicapped community.
It has.
And that sometimes composers get upset when politicians use their songs, the politicians they don't admire. But in this case, it must have been something that was kind of reaffirming when you found out that people were using it that way.
Oh, it's been used by Special Olympics. It became the theme song of the 25th anniversary of the Hole in the Wall gang camps.
How did you come to write
Paul
it?
Newman started. It's not really clear to me what the process was or what the catalyst was. But when I was 15 years old, I had worked for an entire summer as a volunteer in a camp for children with special needs, but it was an arts camp. And I think through multidisciplinary art programs, you get to see children who have maybe challenges in one aspect of their lives and their learning process or whatever. They can gravitate towards something that they can accomplish and they can do really well, whether it was painting or acting or singing. I saw these children who had been institutionalized since birth, some of them. And
in the film, you have the twins, Kate and Kelly Daly, and their mother, Nancy.
Yeah. As I said at the beginning of the interview, I wanted to make a film that honored that relationship with the people who loved the album. And there, 5 million people bought the album. So among those 5 million people were these two girls. And they were twins. They had a congenital disease called EB. And it was a dreadful disease that required anywhere from 6 to 10 hours of medical care a day.
It's like you're having burns all the time
all
on
the
your
time.
Skin.
Affects all the internal organs as well. But I had never met people, the entire family, I had never met a family with so much love and determination.
On the other hand, sometimes you can't always pick who's going to love your work. The serial killer Eileen Wuornos wanted your song Carnival to be played the wake of her execution. You've lived in the Hudson Valley for many years. A lot of musicians have been there. But you became involved in the debate over fracking in the region, collaborated with Mark Ruffalo, Alex Gibney, and others on the Dear Governor Cuomo film.
Yes. Yes, so I was a musical director, and actually the concert that became the event that was filmed was my idea after I'd been to central New York. I went to Binghamton and Ithaca back in 2011 and met with activists there. And they asked me if there's any way that I could bring more attention to the issue of hydraulic fracturing possibly coming to New York, the possibility that we could have anywhere from 30 to 80,000 fracking wells in the state. That's what we were looking at back in 2011. And we were waiting for the health impact study to be completed and for the governor's decision.
Are you happy with the decision he made?
It's like a miracle.
Although he put it off, he didn't end the possibility.
I believe that as long as he's governor, it won't happen, and the fight will have to be vigilant. But I think that we're seeing the collapse of oil because of the glut right now. The bust is one of the boom and bust cycle of the oil and gas industry is something that I think has been going on for 100 years, but we're anticipating a bigger bust than normal, and also just we can't allow the emissions.
You obviously feel that it's important for you to use your position to do things. You made a film called Shelter to benefit victims of domestic violence. You will be speaking with Anthony DeCurtis tonight at 8:15 at the 92nd Street Y, and then performing at the Beacon Theater on March 11th and also the 26th. Listeners can find information about all that on our show page at WNYC.org. And we're going to go out with a little bit from, oh, it's the 28th, go out with a little bit from Wonder. My great thanks to Natalie Merchant for coming by to talk about this set from None Such Paradise Is There, the new Tiger Lily recordings.
Thank you so much.
Of my story, they say I must be one of the wonders of God's own creation.